A mile or two north of the abandoned car?
My guy says, not less than one, not more than two.
On the left?
He's pretty sure, Reacher said.
You got a phone number?
I'll call you back, Reacher said. An hour from now. He hung up. The woman with the baby was gone. Alice was still staring at him.
What?
She said. We should have focused on Eugene before.
Why?
Because what's the one solid fact we've got here?
What?
Carmen didn't shoot Sloop, that's what.
That's an opinion, not a fact.
No, it's a fact, Alice. Believe me, I know these things. She shrugged.
Okay, so?
So somebody else shot him, which raises the question, why? We know Eugene is missing, and we know Sloop is dead. They were connected, lawyer and client. So let's assume Eugene is dead, too, not just missing, for the sake of argument. They were working together on a deal that sprung Sloop from jail. Some kind of a big deal, because that isn't easy. They don't hand out remissions like candy. So it must have involved some heavy-duty information, something valuable. Big trouble for somebody. Suppose that somebody took them both out for revenge, or to stop the flow of information.
Where did you get this idea?
From Carmen, actually, he said. She suggested that's how I should do it. Off Sloop and make like stopping the deal was the pretext.
So Carmen took her own advice?
No, Carmen's parallel, Reacher said. She hated him. She had a motive. She's all kinds of a liar, but she didn't kill him. Somebody else did.
Yes, for her.
No, Reacher said. It didn't happen that way. She just got lucky. It was a parallel event, like he was run over by a truck someplace else. Maybe she's thrilled with the result, but she didn't cause it.
How sure are you?
Very sure. Any other way is ridiculous. Think about it, Alice. Anybody who shoots that well is a professional. Professionals plan ahead at least a few days. And if she had hired a professional a few days ahead, why would she troll around Texas looking for guys like me hitching rides? And why would she allow Sloop to be killed in her own bedroom, where she would be the number one suspect, with her own gun?
So what do you think happened?
I think some hit team took Eugene out on Friday and covered their ass by hiding the body so it won't be found until the trail is completely cold. Then they took Sloop out on Sunday and covered their ass by making it look like Carmen did it, in her bedroom with her own gun.
But she was with him. Wouldn't she have noticed? Wouldn't she have said?
He paused. Maybe she was with Ellie at the time. Maybe she walked back into the bedroom and found it done. Or maybe she was in the shower. Her hair was wet when they arrested her.
Then she'd have heard the shots.
Not with that shower. It's like Niagara Falls. And a .22 pistol is quiet.
How do you know where they'll find Eugene's body, assuming you're right?
I thought about how I would do it. They obviously had a vehicle of their own out there in the middle of nowhere. So maybe they staged a breakdown or a flat, flagged him down, forced him into their vehicle, drove him away. But they wouldn't want to keep him in there long, too risky. 2 or 3 minutes maximum, I figure, which is a mile or two from a standing start.
Why north? Why on the left side?
I'd have driven way north first, turned back and scouted the near side shoulder, picked my place and measured a couple of miles backward, turned around again and set up and waited for him.
Conceivable, she said. But the Sloop thing? That's impossible. They went down to that house, in Echo, in the middle of nowhere, hid out and crept in while she was in the shower?
I could have done it, he said. And I'm assuming they're as good as me. Maybe they're better than me. They certainly shoot better.
You're crazy.
Maybe.
No, for sure. Because she confessed to it. Why would she do that, if it was really nothing at all to do with her?
We'll figure that out later. First, we wait an hour. He left Alice with work to do and went back out into the heat. Decided he'd finally take a look at the Wild West Museum. When he got there, it was closed. Too late in the day. But he could see an alley leading to an open area in back. There was a locked gate, low enough for him to step over. Behind the buildings was a collection of rebuilt artifacts from the old days. There was a small one-cell jailhouse and a replica of Judge Roy Bean's courthouse and the hanging tree. The three displays made a nice, direct sequence. Arrest, trial, sentence. Then there was Clay Allison's grave. It was well tended, and the headstone was handsome. Clay was his middle name. His first name was Robert. Robert Clay Allison, born 1840, died 1887. Never killed a man that did not need killing. Reacher had no middle name. It was Jack Reacher, plain and simple. Born 1960, not dead yet. He wondered what his headstone would look like. Probably wouldn't have one. There was nobody to arrange it. He strolled back up the alley and stepped over the gate again. Facing him was a long, low concrete building, two stories. Retail operations on the first floor, offices above. One of them had Albert E. Eugene, attorney at law, painted on the window in old-fashioned gold letters. There were two other law firms in the building. The building was within sight of the courthouse. These were the cheap lawyers, Reacher guessed, separated geographically from the free lawyers in Alice's row and the expensive lawyers who must be on some other street. Although Eugene had driven a Mercedes-Benz, maybe he did a lot of volume, or maybe he was just vain and had been struggling with a heavy lease payment. He paused at the crossroads. The sun was dropping low in the west, and there were clouds stacking up on the southern horizon. There was a warm breeze on his face. It was gusting strong enough to tug at his clothes and stir dust on the sidewalk. He stood for a second and let it flatten the fabric of his shirt against his stomach. Then it died, and the dull heat came back. But the clouds were still there in the south, like ragged stains on the sky. He walked back to Alice's office. She was still at her desk, still facing an endless stream of problems. There were people in her client chairs, a middle-aged Mexican couple. They had patient, trusting expressions on their faces. Her stack of paperwork had grown. She pointed vaguely at his chair, which was still placed next to hers. He squeezed in and sat down, picked up the phone and dialed the Abilene number from memory. He gave his name as Chester Arthur and asked for Sergeant Rodriguez. He was on hold a whole minute. Then Rodriguez picked up, and Reacher knew right away they had found Eugene's body. There was a lot of urgency in the guy's voice.
"We need your client's name, Mr. Arthur," Rodriguez said.
"What did your people find?" Reacher asked.
"Exactly what you said, sir. Mile and a half north, on the left, in a deep limestone crevasse. Shot once through the right eye."
"Was it a .22?
"No way. Not according to what I'm hearing. 9mm, at least. Some big, messy cannon. Most of his head is gone."
"You got an estimated time of death?"
"Tough question in this heat. And they say the coyotes got to him, ate up some of the parts the pathologist likes to work with. But if somebody said Friday, I don't think we'd argue any."
Reacher said nothing.
"I need some names," Rodriguez said.
"My guy's not the doer," Reacher said. "I'll talk to him, and maybe he'll call you." Then he hung up before Rodriguez could start arguing. Alice was staring at him again, so were her clients. Clearly, they spoke enough English to follow the conversation.
"Which president was Chester Arthur?" Alice asked.
"After Garfield, before Grover Cleveland. One of two from Vermont."
"Who was the other?"
"Calvin Coolidge."
"So they found Eugene," she said.
"Sure did."
"So now what?"
"Now we go warn Hack Walker."
"Warn him?"
Reacher nodded. "Think about it, Alice. Maybe what we've got here is 2 out of 2, but I think it's more likely to be 2 out of 3. They were a threesome, Hack and Al and Sloop. Carmen said they all worked together on the deal. She said Hack brokered it with the feds, so Hack knew what they knew for sure, so he could be next." Alice turned to her clients.
"Sorry, got to go,"
she said in English. Hack Walker was packing up for the day. He was on his feet with his jacket on, and he was latching his briefcase closed. It was after 6 o'clock, and his office windows were growing dim with dusk. They told him that Eugene was dead and watched the color drain out of his face. His skin literally contracted and puckered under a mask of sweat. He clawed his way around his desk and dumped himself down in his chair. He said nothing for a long moment, then he nodded slowly. "I guess Al is new. But I was, you know, hoping." He turned to look down at the photograph. "I'm very sorry," Reacher said. "Do they know why? Or who?" "Not yet." Walker paused again. "Why did they tell you about it before me?"
"Reacher figured out where they should look," Alice said. "He told them."
effectively. Then she went straight into his two-for-three theory. The deal, the dangerous knowledge, the warning. Walker sat still and listened to it. His color came back, slowly. He stayed quiet, thinking hard, and he shook his head. Can't be right. Because the deal was really nothing at all. Sloop caved in and undertook to pay the taxes and the penalties, that was all. Nothing more. He got desperate. Couldn't stand the jail time. It happens a lot. Al contacted the IRS, made the offer. They didn't bat an eye. It's routine. It was handled at a branch office by junior-grade personnel. That's how routine it was. The federal prosecutor needed to sign off on it, which is where I came in. I hustled it through, is all. A little faster than it might have gone without me. You know, the old boys' club. It was a routine IRS matter, and believe me, nobody gets killed over a routine IRS matter. He shook his head again, then he opened his eyes wide and went very still. I want you to leave now, he said. Alice nodded.
We're very sorry for your loss. We know you were friends.
But Walker just looked confused, like that wasn't what he was worrying about.
What?
Reacher said. We shouldn't talk anymore, is what Walker said. Why not? Because we're going around in a circle and we're finishing up in a place where we don't want to be. We are? Think about it, guys. Nobody gets killed over a routine IRS matter. But do they? Sloop and Al were fixing to take the trust money away from Carmen and give most of it to the government. Now Sloop and Al are dead. 2 plus 2 makes 4. Her motive is getting bigger and better all the time. We keep talking like this, I've got to think conspiracy. 2 deaths, not 1. No choice, I've got to, and I don't want to do that. There was no conspiracy, Reacher said. If she had already hired people, why did she pick me up? Walker shrugged. To confuse the issue? Distance herself? Is she that smart? I think she is. So prove it. Show us she hired somebody. I can't do that. Yes, you can. You've got her bank records. Show us the payment. The payment? You think these people work for free? Walker made a face, took keys from his pocket and unlocked a drawer in his desk, lifted out a pile of financial information. Greer non-discretionary trust numbers 1 through 5. Reacher held his breath. Walker went through them, page by page. Then he squared them together again and reversed them on the desk. His face was blank. Alice leaned forward and picked them up, leafed through, scanning the fourth column from the left, which was the debit column. There were plenty of debits, but they were all small and random, nothing bigger than $297, several below $100. Add up the last month, Reacher said. She scanned back.
$900, round figures?
Reacher nodded. Even if she hoarded it, $900 doesn't buy you much. Certainly doesn't buy you somebody who can operate the way we've seen. Walker said nothing. We need to go talk to her, Reacher said. We can't, Walker said. She's on the road, headed for the penitentiary. She didn't do it, Reacher said. She didn't do anything. She's completely innocent.
So why did she confess?
Reacher closed his eyes, sat still for a moment. She was forced to. Somebody got to her.
Who?
Reacher opened his eyes. I don't know who, but we can find out. Get the bailiff's log from downstairs, see who came to visit her. Walker's face was still blank and sweaty, but he picked up the phone and dialed an internal number, asked for the visitor's log to be brought up immediately. Then they waited in silence. 3 minutes later, they heard the sound of heavy footsteps in the secretarial pen, and the bailiff came in through the office door. It was the day guy. He was breathing hard after running up the stairs. He was carrying a thick book in his hand. Walker took it from him and opened it up, scanned through it quickly and reversed it on the desk, used his finger to point. Carmen Greer was logged in during the early hours of Monday morning. She was logged out 2 hours ago into the custody of the Texas Department of Correction. In between, she had received one visitor, twice, 9 o'clock on Monday morning and again on Tuesday at noon. The same assistant DA had gone down to see her. Preliminary interview, And then the confession, Walker said. There were no other entries at all. Is this right? Reacher asked. The bailiff nodded. Guaranteed, he said. Reacher looked at the log again. The first ADA interview had lasted 2 minutes. Clearly, Carmen had refused to say a word. The second interview had lasted 12 minutes. After that, she had been escorted upstairs for the videotape. Nobody else?
There were phone calls, the bailiff said.
When?
All day Monday and Tuesday morning.
Who was calling her?
Her lawyer?
Her lawyer? Ellis said. The guy nodded.
Here's a big pain in the ass. I had to keep bringing her in and out to the phone.
Who is the lawyer?
Alice asked.
We're not allowed to ask, ma'am. It's a confidentiality thing. Lawyer discussion's a secret.
Man or woman?
He's a man.
Hispanic?
I don't think so. He sounded like a regular guy. His voice was a little muffled. I think it was a bad phone line.
Same guy every time?
I think so.
There was silence in the office. Walker nodded vaguely, and the bailiff took it for a dismissal. They heard him walk out through the secretarial pen. They heard the lobby door close behind him.
She didn't tell us she was represented, Walker said. She told us she didn't want representation.
She told me the same thing, Alice said.
We need to know who this person was, Reacher said. We need to get the phone company to trace the calls. Walker shook his head.
Can't do it. Legal discussions are privileged.
Reacher stared at him.
You really think it was a lawyer?
Don't you?
Of course not. It was some guy threatening her, forcing her to lie. Think about it, Walker.
First time your ADA saw her, she wouldn't say a word. 27 hours later, she's confessing. Only thing that happened in between was a bunch of calls from this guy.
But what kind of threat could make her say that?